It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in Kodiak, Alaska, where the weather's pretty darn nice for the first day of Crab Festival. Mostly cloudy skies, 45 degrees, east winds at 8 miles per hour, and they are also reporting 10 miles of visibility out at the airport. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Commissioner of Alaska's Department of Military and Veterans Affairs visited Kodiak to look in on the Pacific Spaceport Complex. Kirsten Dobroth was there and has a report. And teachers in the Mat-Su Borough School District have voted to authorize a strike. A man who pleaded guilty to domestic violence homicide has been sentenced. And Juneau's greenhouse gas emissions have dropped by nearly 30% over the last decade. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. White House and congressional negotiators are facing a major time crunch in reaching an agreement to raise the nation's debt ceiling. NPR's Windsor Johnston reports June 1st, 1 week from today, is the earliest that the U.S. could run out of money to pay its bills.
House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says every hour matters in getting a bill across the finish line.
That's why we worked well past midnight last night. The team they have is very professional, very bright. They know where the differences are.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says avoiding default on the nation's debt is not a matter of debate, but the responsibility of Congress.
You've heard all the congressional leaders make it clear that default is not an option. The president has said that, the speaker has said that, and we want the American people to understand that as well.
House Republicans are demanding that any deal must cut federal spending in exchange for raising the debt ceiling. Windsor Johnston, NPR News, Washington.
The U.S. Supreme Court is sharply limiting which waterways get federal protections in the country. NPR's Nathan Rott reports a decision could have major repercussions for the country's wetlands.
For decades, politicians, lawyers, and interest groups have argued about the scope of the Clean Water Act, which waterways the landmark law actually protects. A federally protected waterway means more paperwork and roadblocks for an industry or developer looking to build or pollute. On Thursday, the Supreme Court sided with private landowners in Idaho who wanted to develop, building a home near a lake, but were stopped by federal law. As a result, now many wetland areas in the country, places that clean water, provide habitat for wildlife, and help manage floods, will no longer be protected under federal law. The Supreme Court's decision is a major victory for industry and developers across the country. Nathan Rott, NPR News.
Today marks 3 years since George Floyd was killed by a police officer on a Minneapolis street. Minnesota Public Radio's John Collins reports Floyd's murder led to a national reckoning on race and policing.
Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey says his administration has worked since Floyd's killing to institute changes to the city's police department, including crisis intervention responders and clearer guidance for officer discipline.
We're not shying away from the murder of George Floyd. We're leaning into it, recognizing that things need to change and change with urgency.
Minneapolis recently agreed to a settlement with the State Department of Human Rights that requires changes to the police department's policies and training. They're also being investigated by the U.S. Department of Justice. For NPR News, I'm John Collins, Minneapolis.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed down 35 points, ending the day at 32,764. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The commissioner of Alaska's Department of Military and Veterans Affairs was on the ground in Kodiak last week, visiting the Pacific Spaceport Complex on Narrow Cape. Major General Torrence Sachs toured the facility and met with Alaska Aerospace personnel. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth was there and has this story.
Last week's spaceport tour included a stop at the silo-shaped tower on Launch Pad 1, one of three launch areas at the facility. That vehicle is a rocket that gets hauled in piece by piece, reassembled and erected with a giant crane before blasting off into space. Kodiak Spaceport is one of the only facilities in the country that can launch rockets and their satellites into polar orbit, which means those satellites rotate around the Earth's north and south poles. The facility receives no state funding, though it falls within Alaska's Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. The California-based ABL Space Systems hoped to launch a rocket at the spaceport successfully for the first time back in January, but the rocket crash-landed there shortly after liftoff, damaging one of the facility's launch pads. The commissioner's visit came as the Pacific Spaceport Complex works to complete cleanup of that site. ABL plans to restart operations there sometime in the next couple months. There was some public backlash over road closures related to testing at the facility last summer. Sachs says they don't want that to happen again.
And we want to make sure that we are communicating with the public, but also doing a good mission here, too, to have that balance to go forward.
Sachs plans to be in Kodiak again later this summer. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
A judge in Bethel has handed down a sentence to a man who pleaded guilty to a domestic violence homicide that took place more than 3 years ago in the village of Crooked Creek. The pattern of domestic violence woven into the case is all too common, and the prosecutor hopes the sentence delivers a message that gets through to others trapped in the same situation. KYUK's Francisco Martinez Cuello has the story.
On Tuesday, Bethel Superior Court Judge Nathaniel Peters sentenced 33-year-old Harold Gregory of Crooked Creek to 45 years.
The Harold Gregory case is a homicide that occurred in August of 2019, and Harold Gregory murdered his girlfriend, Cheryl Sakar, in the home that they shared in Crooked Creek.
That's Prosecutor Bailey Wolfstead. She's an assistant attorney general in the Rural Prosecution Unit. Gregory's case didn't go to trial, but his sentencing was a result of a partial plea agreement, allowing Judge Peters to sentence Gregory to serve between 20 and 45 years for his plea of guilty to one count of murder in the second degree. Although this was a sentencing, witnesses did testify in this case.
And homicide cases are always difficult because a person is lost. There's a person who's gone. And in this case, it was Cheryl Sakar, someone who was a mother to her now 16-year-old daughter and a sibling sister to her three siblings and a friend to so many people in Crooked Creek and a coworker and someone that people really loved. And there's always a lot of emotion that goes in with that, of course, because she was someone who really mattered and who's now gone from that community.
According to the National Institute of Justice, almost 85% of American Indian and Alaska Native women have experienced violence in their lifetime. That's more than 4 out of every 5 Alaska Native women. Gregory admitted to beating his wife, Sakar, many times before.
And despite her family's pleas to her for her to report any of these prior domestic violence incidents to the police, Ms. Sakar didn't. And she didn't, as she told her family, because she loved him. And they lived together and they were dependent on each other.
Sakar would call her brother, Michael Pepperling, sometimes when she was being abused by Gregory, to come pick her up. Sakar even called Pepperling on the night she died.
And the court heard in the sentencing a voicemail that was left on her brother, Mr. Pepperling's phone, of her begging for Mr. Gregory to stop hurting her, and Mr. Gregory can be heard continuing to assault her.
At sentencing, Gregory did apologize to the Sakar family, and he apologized to the court.
He never denied his involvement in the case. From day one when troopers arrived, what he said was that he was intoxicated to the point of blackout, that he could not remember what had occurred the night before, but that if anything happened to her, it was probably him because he'd blacked out and assaulted her in the past.
In handing down the sentence, Judge Peters recognized the completely senseless and avoidable nature of the crime. He recognized that Gregory took responsibilities for his actions and apologized to Sakhar's family. Judge Peters recognized that Gregory was controlling and manipulative of Sakhar, and that Sakhar was a vulnerable victim who had been repeatedly assaulted by Gregory. The judge found that an aggravated sentence was appropriate. The prosecutor hopes this delivers a message.
If there is anything that can come out of this, I would encourage others who are in similar situations to Ms. Sakhar to report when things occur to them, because as Ms. Sakhar's sister, Ms. Osdahl, said at the sentencing, that's not love. That's domestic violence. And to reach out to organizations like Tantra Women's Coalition here in Bethel that can come up with things like a safety plan.
Wolfstead also says that there are things that advocates can do to help people in these situations if shelters aren't an option or available, whether it's creating future safety plans or calling a hotline. The National Domestic Violence Hotline is available 24/7. The number is 800-799-7233. The Bethel Tundra Women's Coalition Crisis Line is 1-800-478-7799. In Bethel, I'm Francisco Martinez-Cuello.
Teachers in the second largest school district in Alaska have voted to authorize a strike. The contract between the Matanuska-Susitna Borough School District and the Mat-Su Education Association expired last July. The two sides began negotiating in January of 2022, but were unable to reach an agreement. Vicki Hewitt is president of the Mat-Su Education Association, which represents roughly 3,400 teachers and support staff.
They want our health care information. The Public Education Health Trust protects that information. If we move to Primera, they will have all of that information. We don't want them to have our health care information.
Hewitt says the union and school district could not agree on two issues: the district's attempt to move to a national health insurance provider and the district's proposal to increase teacher pay by 2% over a 3-year contract, which Hewitt says does not keep up with inflation. 2 weeks ago, the district made their, quote, last best offer, close quote. Last week, the teachers' union voted to approve a strike. According to a union statement on Monday, more than 90% of teachers voted in favor of a strike. The statement says teachers would not go on strike until the fall if an agreement is not reached over the summer.
We don't want to go on strike. We don't want to put our community through that. Our community has already been through so much with the decisions that the school district and the school board have made in the last 2 years. We don't want to do this.
Both the district and union say they are willing to keep discussing the contract. The first day of the regular school year in the Mat-Su Borough is set for August 15th. Juneau's greenhouse gas emissions have dropped by nearly 30% in the last decade. That's according to a new report that measures citywide energy use. That means they've reached a goal set back in 2011. But now it seems it might be time to set new goals as experts urge the world to cut greenhouse gas faster than ever before. KTOO's Anna Canny has more.
Greenhouse gas is everywhere. It comes from the fossil fuel that powers our homes, our cars. And in Juneau, it also powers mines and visiting cruise ships. It's everywhere. So there's no one way to get rid of it.
There really just aren't any silver bullets.
That's Steve Banke, Energy Chair for the Juneau Commission on Sustainability.
You really have to make these incremental gains on a whole bunch of different fronts, and then over time they add up.
He's been working on local climate policy for years, promoting all kinds of carbon-cutting technology. Little things like LED lights, and bigger solutions like electric vehicles and heat pumps. A new report that added up all of the city's emissions from 2021 shows that those solutions are working. Total emissions are down nearly 30% from 2011.
It's good news. Reducing emissions is something that is a community value, and we're moving in the right direction.
That's Denise Koch. She's the city's deputy director of public works, and she's one of the people who contributed to the new report, which takes an inventory of local energy use and greenhouse gas emissions. Probably comes as no surprise that transportation and buildings are the biggest fossil fuel burners. Those sectors still rely heavily on oil and gas, but Juneau has cheap renewable hydropower, so those are also the areas where the community can cut emissions pretty easily by introducing electric technology. And we already have. There are a lot more electric cars on the road since 2011, and thousands of electric heat pumps have been installed since then too. But another thing the report highlights is that Juneau hasn't updated its emissions targets since it first adopted a climate adaptation plan almost 15 years ago. Back then, the city set a goal to cut 30% of emissions by 2032. And at the time, that felt ambitious. But today, it falls short of national and international standards. At the same time, federal money for cutting carbon and ramping up clean electricity is more readily available than ever. And having an idea of where local emissions come from can help the city to strategize and compete for that funding.
I see it as a foundational document. Once you know where your emissions are coming from, then you can make decisions and policy changes based on that information.
Now that the report is out, Banky and the rest of the Juneau Commission on Sustainability will put together a policy recommendation to present to the Assembly sometime this summer. One of the big ones might be setting that more aggressive emissions reduction target. But they'll also suggest doing more of these annual reports in the future. That way, Juneau can track its progress as the community continues to work on shrinking its carbon footprint over time. Reporting from Juneau, I'm Anna Canny.
Last week, hundreds of people flooded the streets of Petersburg to eat traditional Norwegian foods, dance traditional dances, and sling herring at each other. The small island community, known as Alaska's Little Norway, celebrated its Norwegian heritage, which stretches back to the 1800s, when Norwegian families immigrated to Mitkoff Island to harvest fish and ice from the nearby glacier. KFSK's Shelby Herbert takes us downtown to join in some of the merriment.
The week-long festival marks the coming of spring, the beginning of the local fishing season, and Norway's Constitution Day. It started on a sweet note with local bakers gathering at the Sons of Norway Hall to demonstrate how they make traditional Norwegian treats. Samantha Wikan Williams is cutting and frying dough to make fatimen, a type of cookie flavored with cardamom.
Kind of looks like a bow tie.
Ooh,
yeah,
awesome.
This is the cutter. So there's a special cutter that you roll it out, and then you cut it, and you tuck one side inside of a little hole.
Out in the streets, things are a little more chaotic and messy. Festival goers line up on Main Street to compete in the annual herring toss. It's like an egg toss, only participants are throwing dead fish at each other.
Make sure you give the herring a little kiss. Just good luck.
There are a lot of unsupervised children running around, and many of the older kids are decked out in braids and bunader, a festive costume based on old Norwegian folk outfits. Brandy Tinas leads a line of Petersburg's Likering dancers through the streets. Dancing is a childhood staple in Petersburg. Alaska Senator Bert Stedman and Petersburg's mayor, Mark Jensen, grew up here together. They recall a time when they had to put on the little blue knickers.
Dance down the street with the girls when we were little, like the young guys do now. We thought it was torture. The mayor was right with me being tortured.
Oh, hard to say how our parents had us dressed up, you know, who knows what we were wearing.
Remember, we had the blue, some kind of blue, so blue uniforms, yeah. Yeah.
Same thing as today, basically. Yeah.
Do you still remember how to dance?
No.
No, I think you're lying to me.
The Vikings and Valkyries are the most easily recognizable locals. They carry swords and axes and horn goblets, and they're known for riding around in a party bus, which drives revelers around town, blasting club music into the night. The leader of the group will only identify himself by his Viking name, the Harbor Barbarian. He has a snow-white mountain goat pelt draped over his shoulders, and he says it took him a while to put the ensemble together.
I killed this over at Horns Cliff.
No kidding.
I did. I shot my wolf out the road, and my deer was taken on Prince of Wales.
But the Vikings aren't just here to party and look cool.
they treat the group like kind of a seasonal civic organization. The scary men and women in furs and face paint also join in the traditional dances and let the kids beat them up with pool noodles in a series of festival games.
And my favorite part is actually interacting with the kids, being downtown, and just kind of being ambassadors. You know, we want to make sure that we show a good face for the town. And there's a lot of folks in town that are here just for a day. Then we want them to feel special.
For many festival goers, Little Norway marks a triumphant exit from the bitter winter season. But for others, it's about celebrating a unique way of life. Adrian Schwartz returned home from Juneau for the event. She says the tradition means everything to her.
I mean, growing up in Petersburg, learning to Norwegian dance and do all of those things, the baking and the being involved in commercial fishing and hunting. And just a lot of it's important to me because it's a different way of life. So we kind of grow up here knowing how to take care of ourselves.
The Little Norway Festival is held in Petersburg the third weekend of every May, coinciding with May 17th, which is Norway's Constitution Day. In Petersburg, I'm Shelby Herbert.
The economy is doing a little better than previously thought. I'm Nova Sapa with a Marketplace Minute. The Commerce Department initially estimated that the nation's gross domestic product grew by 1.1% in the first 3 months of the year. Today, it revised that number up to 1.3%. Still slower than last year, but not by as much as previously thought. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says negotiators made some progress last night in talks over the terms for raising the nation's borrowing limit. Amid the impasse, the government's short-term borrowing costs jumped 2.5 percentage points over the last month. Initial claims for jobless benefits were essentially flat last week at 229,000. That's below what economists had forecast. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, providing commercial real estate investment and technology. See a brighter way.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 25th day of May, the year 2023, first day of Crab Fest here in Kodiak. It's a beautiful day, 45 degrees under mostly cloudy skies. Out at the airport they are showing east winds to 8 miles per hour, 10 miles of visibility they have, and 77% humidity. We have an outgoing tide. Our next low tide is coming up pretty soon. That will happen at 12:46 this afternoon here on the east side and be 0.4 feet, followed by a high tide at 7:42 p.m. of 5.7 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 1:07 this afternoon and be 1 foot in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 7:49 p.m. of 10 feet. Look for just a 40% chance of rain this afternoon, with mostly cloudy skies through tonight and tomorrow. 40% chance of rain tomorrow too. Highs in the upper 40s, lows in the lower 40s overnight tonight. North winds about 5, turning to the west tonight about 10, back to the southeast tomorrow, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Looks like a couple of pretty nice days at least for Crab Fest. Speaking of which, things happening at Crab Fest today include the opportunity starts today to give blood for the Blood Bank of Alaska. That is by appointment only. It's happening at the National Guard Armory. Call Tara Cup to make your appointment at 907-654-5300. Also, the Kodiak Crab Fest coloring contest is going on. Just drop by the Discover Kodiak for a page to color. It's in different age groups, 3 and under, 4 to 6, 7 to 11, and 12 and up. Return it by 4 p.m. on Tuesday, May 30th, and be entered for a chance to win a gift card to Grand Slam Toys and Games. Each age group will be eligible for one gift card. Also, the Lutik Museum and the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center are both admission free. Stop by any time the Crab Fest is going on with your family to check them out, the Lutik Museum and the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center. The Kodiak Island Brewing Company is having its 20th anniversary celebration. That has already begun and is expected to go to 8 p.m. All are welcome. They're featuring beer, spirits, cocktails, and non-alcoholic drinks until 8 p.m. Sport your tie-dye and or brewery logoed gear to be entered for prizes. Also, the Lego building contest is going on today, and that's happening at the Kodiak Elks Lodge beginning at 4 p.m. Come down to the lodge to see Lego creations built by our own Lego brickmasters locally here. And the lodge's upstairs restaurant and bar will be open to the public for the duration of Crab Festival. Because the bar is open, anyone under the age of 21 must be accompanied by a parent or legal guardian. But otherwise, go and enjoy the famous Elks Lodge Bar. Pardoning of the Crab is happening at 5:15 p.m. That's happening at the Crab Fest stage in the mall. And the predicted mile run is starting at 5:30 p.m. That's happening at the Baranoff Park, I believe. Yes, the Joe Floyd Track and Field at Baranoff Park. Sign-up starts at 5:30 p.m. It's an event in which the participant estimates the time it will take them to run 1 mile. The winner is the person who comes closest to predicting his own time. You're not allowed to wear watches or listen to music. Call the Teen Center for more information on that at 907-486-8665. And lots of other good stuff is going on, including the Credit Union One Kindness Silent Auction happening at Credit Union One starting at 6:30 p.m. tonight. They're going to have food and music by Kodiak's own Isle Bells. Enjoy treats and beverages while bidding on unique items, and all the proceeds will benefit Kodiak Kindness, the Kodiak Kindness Project. Well, other things are going on in Kodiak, including the City Council's regular meeting. That's happening at 7:30 tonight in the public library. The meeting is open to the public, and public members are also encouraged to tune in to KMXT on 100.1 FM. The meeting will also be web-streamed, and web-streaming links and meeting packets are available at the Kodiak City of website. Contact the City Clerk's office at 907-486-8636 if you have any questions. And the Assembly will be also having a special meeting tonight. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. and will be followed by a work session. It's happening at the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. Their next regular meeting will be a week from tonight at 6:30 p.m. in the Borough Assembly Chambers. The meetings are open to the public, and packets are available at the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. And remember, Assembly meetings are live-streamed on the Kodiak Island Borough YouTube channel. If you subscribe, they will send you live stream notifications. And one of the great parts of Crab Fest is the Kodiak Public Library Association's annual used book sale. That begins on Friday, tomorrow at 1 p.m. for members and 2 p.m. for the general public. The book sale is going from 1 to 5 Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday, and noon to 5 p.m. on Sunday. Books are only $5 a bag, and please bring your own bag if you have one. Also, all are invited to walk with the Kodiak Pride Float and the Crab Fest Parade. Rainbow attire is encouraged. They're meeting at Main Elementary Saturday, 9:45 a.m. The parade goes from 10 to 10:30. Look for the Kodiak Pride Float. And the whole idea is to promote visibility, community, and inclusivity. Find out more at the Kodiak Pride Facebook page. Things happening at the library include the Bridge Club. It won't be meeting this next Monday because they'll be closed for Memorial Day. But otherwise, Bridge Club meets Mondays at 1 p.m. All interested players are welcome. Wednesdays at 3:30 p.m., the library offers a Lego Club. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. Attention Kodiak High School class of 1973. Join them for a reunion dinner September 2nd. For more information, visit their website. That's at myevent.com/Kodiak73. That's myevent.com/Kodiak73. Or call Janelle at 425-879-7067 or Terry at 907-654-7067. 7713. Help spread the word and see you in September.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.